You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, the Binge Aftertaste.
Hey, what's up, bingers?
Bingers.
In case you hadn't heard, we're currently running our first ever Indiegogo campaign for Better Call Binge, an animated series featuring the OG3 and some of your favorite Binge Media bits and segments. In order to make this project happen, we need your help. Only you can be a part of Binge Media's first ever animated production. Check it out at bingemedia.net/bettercallbinge or search for Better Call Binge at indiegogo.com to view the trailer, learn more, and donate. We have tons of great perks, from Binge Media swag to guest hosting a binge cast to even having your own animated cameo in the series. So what are you waiting for? Check out the campaign today and don't miss out on becoming a part of Binge Media history with Better Call Binge, the animated series. Go to bingemedia.net/bettercallbinge or search for Better Call Binge at indiegogo.com. And now, on to the show.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back to Binge Media,
you're gonna need a bigger boat.
Three journeymen podcasters embark on an adventure of getting through four famous movies about sharks and then filling your ear holes with detailed reviews.
Here come my pride and joy.
Join Garrett.
That's a 20-footer. 25. 3 tons of it.
Law.
And I know what a shark looks like because I've seen one up close. And you better do something about this one because I don't intend to go through that hell again.
And Nate.
I think that I am familiar with the fact that you are going to ignore this particular problem until it swims up and bites you on the ass.
As they watch all four Jaws films with a certain Brit watching the sequels for the very first time.
You son of a...
Will they finish their mission? Will Nate get swallowed whole by Law and Garrett's love of these four shark tales?
See, you got your rubbers!
Or will the binge community end up terrorized because of the three's insistence on fighting?
Well, this is not a boat accident. There wasn't any propeller. There wasn't any coral reef. And it wasn't Jack the Ripper.
It was a shark.
Find out in these four upcoming podcasts, courtesy of Binge Media.
Here's to swimming with bow-legged women.
Jaws 2, released June 16th, 1978. Budget on this thing was $30 million. Box office, $208.9 million, and is directed by, oh boy, and it is directed by Jeannot Swark.
Can you say that again?
Jeannot Swark.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Jeannot Swark. Sure.
All right, boys. Took a little while to get this thing going, but they got the same producers. They thought about getting Spielberg back on. He said yes at first, and then things kind of came up. He did Close Encounters instead. Kind of got screwed out of that deal. They ended up with this another director who pretty much screwed things up, and the producers fired him really quick. And we're stuck with Jeannot Swark, and here's our sequel to Jaws. Mr. Law, I want to get to Nate here in a little bit, but Mr. Law, what is your first experience with Jaws 2?
Well, as I mentioned, last aftertaste, I saw this in a theater. I was very, very young, and this was the movie where they threw me on a waterbed after and made me fucking... shit myself. And I did find out where I first saw Jaws. I saw Jaws, no fucking word of a lie, I was one. I saw Jaws at a drive-in.
Are you serious?
Yep. My brother told me. He said, and he even explained to me, he's like, all the memories you have of Jaws as a kid are from Jaws 2. Like, all my Jaws memories are from this movie, because very, very, like, persuasive, like, fucking age, right? Like, what was this? 78?
78.
So I'm 4. And they go see this fucking movie in the theater. So, all I remember is this movie, and I never, ever remember Jaws. So I don't remember when I still don't remember when I officially saw Jaws and remembered it, but I was at the fucking driving for Jaws. Anyways, yeah, saw this in a theater, got thrown in a waterbed after because my dad's fucking drunk friend thought it was funny, and I fucking cried.
It is pretty funny now. I think as an adult with a kid, I'd love to do this to Adelaide.
I can't wait for those stories, Nate. those stories are coming. It's interesting you say that, Law, that all your association with the first Jaws is actually with this one, your first experience, because this is the one that kind of made the saying, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, famous. Like, people associate that with the first Jaws, but this was actually the one that coined that phrase.
Absolutely.
Mr. Pearson, this was your first time watching, correct?
It was my first time watching, yes.
Have you heard anything about it before you watched it, or
no? I mean, there's some surprising things about this. As I say, I literally had watched the first one, as I say, 10, 15 years ago, whatever it may have been, and I don't know why I didn't want to follow it up. I think I had this weird conception that all of the following films were trash that should not be watched, which may or may not be true, because obviously I haven't watched 3 and 4 yet, but. I don't know why. I just thought that they were completely the straight to DVD films of their day. And for example, I didn't realise that Brody was back in this. I genuinely thought that this was going to be a completely new tale, and it just happened to be maybe still in Amity, but just a different shark, different people to attack. I couldn't tell you anything about these three films at all. So everything is new to me.
There's four of them.
Yeah, I meant the three. I meant the three.
Oh, the three that you haven't seen. Yeah.
The three sequels. Yeah. Okay.
I could tell you what I know about the first film, but I'd seen the first film, Jim. Come on.
We'll start.
I watched this, as I said last week, 3 was my first Jaws experience, quote unquote. And then it was the second one. And I didn't see this one until I was probably about 2-3 years after I saw the first one. And I remember vividly, I rented it at my grandparents' house in Chicago, you know, and at the time, it was one of my favorite movies ever. I fucking loved it, you know, but I was all into all things shark by that point. Mm-hmm. I haven't revisited this movie too much. I had fond memories of it, but revisiting it, you know, I definitely have some new thoughts on it, and we'll get into it as we go.
Okay.
So this was like my third Jaws experience. Boy, Jim, wouldn't it be great if we could experience Jaws for the first time? He's going to be experiencing 2, 3, and 4 for the very first fucking time.
Yeah, I mean, 4. Yeah, have fun with 4. I don't know what to tell you. It's just, 3 is fucking hilarious. Like, if you go into the right mindset that it's fucking hilarious, then you're going to have a good time with it.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I don't want to show my cards too early on this one, but as a reviewing experience, I found this film particularly difficult. So I'm hoping 3 and 4 are trash, because I really want to watch. I'm like I said this when we did the indie retrospectives, I liked being the villain, and whilst I know that people aren't going to necessarily hate me if I don't enjoy 3 and 4, I'm looking forward to hopefully being able to pick it apart and be Nate picking, as it was coined at the time.
And by the way, before we get into this one, I'm just going to inverse exactly what Law just said. If you go into the fourth one with that exact attitude, I think you'll have a good time with it, but we'll get there.
Yep.
We open up with an exploration of the Orca ship, which is the closest we'll get to seeing Robert Shaw in this movie.
I think there's some shards of him on the deck there, a little bit.
Some shark poops laying around.
Kind of a neat little callback. Even if the Williams score in this fucking beginning is horrendous, mm-hmm. I hate the score to this film.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice. See, I have a problem with that a lot of times. It doesn't affect me. I think when it's really good, it affects me. But when it's really bad, I don't seem to notice it. That's for any movie, really.
They get attacked, and a camera falls by the wayside. And so it's our first opening scene of Jaws 2, a different kind of attack than the first one. Nate, what are your thoughts on the opening scene of this film?
TV movie. I liked that we also didn't get to see the shark or anything like that, but at the same time, just the sort of point of view shots and things like that, it just felt a little bit too cheesy when you've come off the back of one where a lot of the kill scenes are masterfully done. This is obviously the first time I've seen any other Jaws attack. And yeah, I just was a little bit cheesy. I like who they attacked and the actual sort of setup of it. Although they did have the most trigger happy camera of all time because it was just constantly going off as it was falling through the water. But the actual way that the kill played out was a little bit just cheesy for me.
We see a very impatient Roy Scheider, both the actor and the character. If you guys, if anybody listened to my Carl Gottlieb interview, you'd know that Roy Scheider was not a very happy guy on this set. The only reason he was on the set was to fulfill a universal contract negotiation. It shows, and it's because I have a feeling the way he is in this car getting there, like that's pretty much probably the way he was daily on this fucking set.
Yeah. There's some legendary fucking stories about the fights he had with this.
Yes.
Je ne suis. They did not get along, and they fucking verbally fucking had it out in front of everybody quite a few times.
Yes.
When he's up the observation tower, is that him looking for a way off the set?
He's stuck in traffic on his way to a party, which is the opening of a Holiday Inn. Huh? We're starting to see the commercialism of blockbuster filmmaking at this point. You know, we're seeing there are a lot of Coke cans in this movie. There's a lot of product placement here. I was shocked at how much product placement was here. Like, this is a small island, and it's opening up to a Holiday Inn. I wasn't annoyed with that.
But that should happen on these small islands. You know what I mean?
Especially 3 years after there's been some brutal attacks and deaths by a shark. That's where the Holiday Inns really want to make their money.
But the terror scene. That's what I think the opening scene. Thanks for asking me how I felt about it too, Garrett. I think the opening scene works because it makes it like the first movie is like kind of legendary, you know, in real life.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't seem that way with Brody's character throughout the movie, that like nobody fucking gives him the time of day for anything. Because like I said, he did the most famous badass fucking killing of all time and no one saw it. But anyways, people still know where the fucking ship is. It's a tourist destination. You know what I mean? All the rich people want to go out and fucking check it out. That's fucking real. Like, you know what I mean? Shit like that, like that dark shit that people fucking want to go be a part of. I actually like the beginning. I don't like the sign on the orca ship. Like, I don't know if that sign existed in the
first movie.
It was kind of weird. But I do like the throwback to, hey, let's go see where the orca went down. It makes you think that it was like a legendary thing that happened. And I don't think that's going to keep people away from the island. I think people are fucking going to want to go there to see that kind of shit. And a Holiday Inn thing, that doesn't bother me. Look, I'm going to get it right off the hop right now. I fucking love Jaws 2, so we're gonna have words the whole fucking movie. I love this movie, always have. Like, I'm just letting you know, like, I'm going to fucking argue when it's needed. I'll argue with you, but I do understand it's a lesser movie. Like, that opening scene is a lesser opening scene by far. But still, it's a cool little throwback. Now, yeah. If we're going to pick on the Holiday Inn thing, come on, look at all these little fucking destination places that have fucking Hiltons and shit like that. It's the same shit. It's the same kind of shit.
All right, I was going to say this for later, but I'm going to go ahead and say this right now. Mm-hmm. This opening scene, the opening scene of this movie, is a huge microcosm of how I feel about the entire film.
Okay.
Because in the first film, all right, Spielberg, he introduces us to Christy Watkins. He introduces us to this guy. We don't really get to know them, but we get to know them before they go in just enough to feel for them when they're dying.
Right.
This movie is full of characters and full of anonymous characters. And I don't know who the fuck these people are. Nobody knows who the fuck these people are. Here comes a shark taking over, and this camera's going off. And as Nate said, it is so goddamn convenient with how much this fucking thing's going off. Right away, the movie's starting off on a really negative foot.
It's the boat and the shark that are the most important parts of this beginning. Like, these guys aren't important, right? It's just to get you back. Like, what are they doing? Oh, it's the fucking boat from the first movie. And then a shark comes. I understand what you're saying, though. I don't have a problem with this opening scene.
Okay.
I'm just going to say you guys fine.
You'll probably be doing that a lot in this podcast.
Yeah. I feel like I'm probably going to be sat right in the middle of you two in this entire film.
How's it feel to be the ref instead of the fighter?
It's Nate? Nice. I won't lie.
So Janos Swark is doing his best Coppola impersonation as he's reintroducing characters in this party. And, you know, like Coppola did with the wedding. I mean, that's all I thought of when I was watching this fucking scene. And, you know, we're seeing Ellen, we're seeing Sean, and he's introducing people like Tina, who's cutting the ribbon. And I don't know, this scene, it's just a weird scene, this opening of this fucking hotel. There's a character who resembles Hooper in that he wants to stoop Ellen. You know, we're going to see this guy a little bit, and there's some scenes that are cut with this guy, this Joe Muscarella, or whatever his name is. It's just a weird opening party scene.
It is, like you said, there's a lot of characters, especially obviously the kids. They, without really giving you any sort of backstory, like you said, there's no real context of who these are. But you just get to see so many young adults at this party, just because they play into the later in the film. But yeah, the guy that's clearly wants to bang Ellen, whose name is Len Peterson, so I'm glad that the villain, the human villain, shares my surname. That's extra douchey in this film, and sets up a rivalry that I don't think they ever really explain or follow through on.
I feel like they needed someone else. It couldn't have just been the mayor this time, right? It had to have been a higher up this time that was calling the shots. There had to have been higher stakes here. Not just keep the beaches open, but keep the fucking beaches open because we're trying to sell fucking, you know, condos or whatever the fuck we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, like, the mayor's back here. How the hell did he get reelected? But he's back in this movie. And
the mafia.
And, well, I was about ready to say, that was their original idea for this movie. They were going to go with the mafia route that they cut out of the first film.
Jesus.
Which, you know, would have been a different take on it, obviously. There were a whole bunch of thrown out things that actually the first director was going to go. The first director was going to go really, really dark. And then the producers just kind of put the ixnay on that, and they said, yeah, we're just going to pretty much play the same beats as the first film and see how it goes. And there's another thing going on in this party that I want to say, too. Mm-hmm. In the first film, it was pretty much encompassed by adults. You know, we had Brody and three middle-aged guys. I mean, Hooper's obviously young, but three adult guys going on this boat, and they're going after the shark after this shark attacks this kid on the raft and everything, and it kind of pushes them forward. Here, we're seeing a changing in demographic, too. Mm-hmm. We're seeing the openings of, like, almost like an 80s slasher craze, where we're seeing all these anonymous teen characters who are, by the way, they don't die, but I'm going to get to that here in a little bit, but... yeah, just a lot of anonymous teen characters, and it's just a weird, weird shift.
Garrett, you bring up the point of the movie to me. This movie, if you approach it as a slasher movie, it all makes sense. It flows in those cheesy 80 fucking slasher movies. Look at Friday the 13th is not a good fucking movie. If you watch again, it's not. But it's heralded as one of the classic slasher movies. This is the exact same setup. Imagine this island being summer camp for all these teenagers, and they're working the camp. And that's all they're doing. They're fucking. They're working at this party. They're fucking around with the punch. They're just being fucking. They're bored and they want to go fucking out in their boats all the time. The whole movie is a slasher movie.
Out of interest, I mean, obviously it might be difficult to tell, but do you think that is talking to or speaking of the audience that they were necessarily going for? As in, when the first Jaws opened, did it maybe perform better with the younger generation than some of the older ones, and they thought, well, let's go in that direction and try and play to that crowd more.
Like Garrett said, I think there's a few incarnations of this movie, and I think this is what we ended up with because of Schneider basically not wanting to do it and Dreyfuss not gonna do it. Like he was doing fucking
Close Encounters
too, yeah, like, so he was out. Yeah. But they, you know, they wanted all that shit back. Didn't you say this was supposed to be the Indianapolis fucking movie at one point? Like,
yeah, at one point they're gonna do that. Yeah, too,
so
yeah.
I mean, it's all like, I can't tell. Like, I wouldn't be able to say like this is what they were going for. It's just, I just think it's how it ended up. It's just, and it's weird though. It's weird how fucking solidly it fits that slasher profile.
Mm-hmm. I hate the majority of these kids that are introduced. It'd be something if these people were introduced as fish food, right? That would be something. But not, like, one of the 20 of these kids dies.
Two of them, sorry.
Yeah. Two of them die. The movie can't even get that right. And we're getting introduced to this mayor's kid, who is a complete asshole, and they can't even kill him. Like, it's just catering to something I just don't like. Yeah.
And this is 78, and I don't know, maybe that was pushed too far, killing a bunch of fucking kids. I don't know, but, like, Friday the 13th could do it. I don't know maybe killing them with a shark too much. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know why it ended up this way, but it's awesome.
I'm with you, Garrett. I mean, I didn't enjoy one of these kids, really. Maybe the Miss Amityville, whatever her name was. I can't remember what her name was.
Tina?
Tina.
Tina's a rough movie. She does,
but she's relatively likable compared to the guy at the punch bowl who tells the joke about blind dates. Is fucking, he should have been eaten by a shark then and there. There should have been a little shark that just jumped out of the punch and ate his face.
Yeah, look, the character development is something to be improved upon. Let's just say that I've seen this movie like probably a dozen times, and I still mix up a couple of the characters near the end of the movie. Like, I can't tell which one is who that did something earlier in the Like, I don't know. There's no development here other than Michael and Sean. I don't know. I will never know their names ever. I'll never know a single other one of these characters' names. Oh, well, Tina, because it's on her fucking boat. There's no, with you guys, there's just no development whatsoever for these kids. But I couldn't tell you at the same time, couldn't tell you any fucking character's name in Friday the 13th either. Couldn't do it. Not one. Not one.
The only one of these kids I kind of recognize is Keith Gordon, only because, you know, we see him in Christine and more movies later on in his career. And he's like a director now, too. So that's really the only one who would really go on to do much of anything after this movie was out. So we cut to a parasailer in an interesting almost death. Mm-hmm. But, of course, it's all false suspense as it leads to one of the funniest comedic bits of the 70s. This fucking shark attacking this water skier. I tell you, it starts off cool. You know, it's like chasing this thing down. And it's actually a pretty interesting scene. But in one of the funniest bits of physical comedy I've ever seen, this broad grabs a fucking can of gasoline, pours it on herself, and then shoots a flare.
No, listen, I knew we were going to fight with the scene, but you're not wrong at all. I totally agree that when she grabs that gasoline, it's so hilarious. But when she's skiing and the fin comes up, there are a lot of great fucking shots in this movie. And absolutely, that is one of the first great shot of this movie is when that fin comes up next to the skier. I fucking love that shot. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's cheesy and all that, but the outcome of this scene is what I love because it gives the shark fucking character and it makes it scarier than the first shark. I fucking love Burnt Jaws. I love Burnt Jaws.
Two-Face.
Fucking greatest.
Two-Face Jaws.
That is my fucking greatest joy of this movie is how scary and fucked up the shark is in the movie. It's awesome.
It definitely gives a character, and that was an idea of the producers, was to give it that scar because you wanted it to stand out amongst the other shark, you know. And it, you're right, it does make it stand out for sure.
It also gives that element of surprise of, although we obviously as viewers know that there's going to be a shark in this film, you sort of watch it, and after that scene, you don't really know how bad the shark's come off. You know, quite conceivably, that shark could have been killed through that, and the rest of the film was an entirely different shark that attacked all of them. So it sort of gives you that sort of, when you get the payoff a little later and you see the shark again for the second time,
right?
It does at least give you that, oh shit, he survived and he's gruesome now. But yeah, no, the just going back, the gasoline bit is just it's weird. I can't even work out. I had to rewind it because I can't even work out whether she did it intentionally or not.
I thought about that too. I thought about maybe if she committed suicide. That was actually a thought that crossed my mind.
Literally, the first thing that went through my mind was maybe sharks are put off by gasoline, and she was going to try and like. It was the 70s version of the shark repellent spray. that's what I thought it was at first. But then, like you say, it's just a weird scene. I need to know, how do sharks really attack boats like this? It's getting to the point where it feels like sharks can walk because they seem to get onto boats and into boats so bloody easily all the time in these films.
All right, first point, don't ever watch fucking any of the Mega Shark movies, Nate. You would not get them at all. And it's a fucking movie. You got to make
this
shit. You know what I mean? Like, what's it going to circle the boat for 3 hours and that's the movie? Like, no. It's got to be aggressive. That's the thing with these sharks. You know, they made comments about it. This is aggressive fucking, aggressive hunter. Here's the weird thing about the gasoline thing. It's completely unneeded. The shark is eating the boat.
Yeah.
You could imagine a gasoline tank would just tip over. And they could have a fucking nice close-up shot of gasoline tipping over so that we get it. But the way she lifts it up and dumps it on her tits is just one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. But you know what I mean? Like, couldn't it work if it just, you just saw a gasoline tank tip over and then and she's panicking, she takes a flare gun and shoots it. The exact same outcome with less fucking hilarity.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. She could quite easily have just, in the panic, not realized that there was an open canister there. It's very weird. Mm. It's very weird. I don't understand what the choice was there, but...
Yeah, all I know is that Spielberg could have probably staged this so that it was terrifying. This, it's just getting from point A to point B, and it's not working for me.
Yeah.
Brody tells Hendrix to drag the water, look for more evidence, and as they do, they find a power line. I wonder what this will be used for later.
Don't look it. You've seen this movie a few times. When you first saw it, you're like, what the... the fuck is that?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that was, and that's, they use that scene pretty well too, because you don't know what the fuck they're pulling up, and it's kind of fucking intense. You know what I mean? Imagine the first time you watch it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
We also, I don't know if we've got there yet or not, but there's also a bit that I noticed about, we commented on the first film about how there was the woman, the secretary, was talking about the kids that were karate chopping picket fences and how that sort of, how that played off against the fact that obviously this tragedy was happening. I noticed here that there was a similar incident where somebody was complaining about some kid and all his noise on his ham radio.
Yeah.
And
It's nice to see that the small time amateur is still, you know, moaning about such tiny little issues.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
With the making up for the absence of three, I'm just going to say, pinnacle parts of that first film, Dreyfuss, Shaw, and Spielberg, what they do is they give these smaller characters more to do. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I think they make Brody look, you know, and I'm going to talk about the Brody character as we go, but they make him look kind of like he looks incompetent. Because they're giving these characters, like Hendrix has more to do here. Mm-hmm. The fucking chatty broad, the Ellen's chatty friend from the first film, she's back. She's got more to do. Fucking Harry makes a decision. He's just like, oh, what is this, seaweed? Like, they're giving all of these guys new things to do. Mm-hmm. And if you just had somebody who could actually stage a scene like this and put it together, it would have actually worked well. And not to mention, we don't have Dreyfuss to offset some of the comedy that we desperately need in this film that is intentional, not unintentional, like the skiing scene.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Mike wants to go back out sailing, and there's a bit of Brody asking why everyone is so obsessed with sailing, to which Ellen answers, it's an island. And for a brief instant, I'm actually brought back to the everyday feel of the first. You know, we're seeing the family life again, and the more they show these kinds of scenes, the more I'm drawn to this family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like this stuff.
Yeah. We again alluded to, you know, how Jim said that he wouldn't want his kids being on a boat on their own. And I know Mike is obviously a little older and things like that, but you still, like, only a couple of years after these big shark attacks, you still have a little bit of reservation about your kid going out on the water. I agree. The family is probably the strongest part of this, just because you can identify with them, I guess, and you can sort of relate to how they would be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then we find a killer whale that's washed ashore, and we are introduced to the Hooper of this film, an oceanographer who takes samples, and Brody is convinced that a shark did this. But not only that, he is convinced that the shark is doing it out of a vendetta.
Well, I don't know if he's convinced. I don't know. I thought they handled this okay. Like, he still knows nothing about sharks. Like, 70s internet is still not working. He can't get it to connect. And he's just kind of like, would it be, is it possible for one shark to send a signal to another shark, like dolphins? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's fucking, that's Brody. I think it's pretty fucking great. Brody is obviously, I imagine we're all going to agree that we wish Brody was used a little better in this film.
Yes.
But he does play the part of a frustrated fucking, you know, sheriff pretty well in this film. Now, whether that's his frustration of the movie coming out in his character or whatever, but he does. I just think that he does a good job in it. We can all agree, this fucking oceanographer chick, she's a fucking cunt. Like, she's a major cunt when she fucking walks up here, right? She's the worst.
Yeah, she's definitely a hooper.
In fact, that's the only fucking note I made about this movie. Is somebody...
I do love when she says, sharks don't take things personal, Mr. Brody. Mm-hmm. Give it a couple movies.
They don't even really introduce her that well. You know, Hooper gets a bit more of a fanfare. And I appreciate they don't want to repeat the same beats all the time. And there's no need to necessarily make a big deal of every new character. But at the same time, she just walks on the beach. And to some degree, you sort of learn as she's going what she's there to do. There's no sort of real introduction of, this is this woman, this is what she's here to do.
Right. She doesn't give a fuck what he like about what happened in the first movie either. She's not impressed at all.
But
no.
But you saying about Brody's character and his frustration, I mean, obviously it plays out through the rest of the film. You know, this is a guy who battle to even get anyone to believe there was a shark first time round.
Right.
And even once they did, he obviously saw, you know, somebody he became relatively close to get, you know, eaten in front of his eyes. He went through a traumatic experience,
mm-hmm.
and they just, the entire town just treats him like he's the local drunk homeless guy that has nothing credible to say. It's, so you can sort of see why that works. He doesn't get used very well, but at the same time, I think that the choice they make with him as a character to sort of like make him impotent, it works to try and make this a different film to Jaws.
But I'd love a I don't know what you would call it, like a little mini movie, Jaws 1.5, where Brody goes back and tells everyone what happened. I'm obsessed with this. I'm obsessed with this fucking fact that no one
saw this. You are. But nobody's seen it. You're so obsessed
Brody,
with that.
Brody swims back and he fucking tells everybody what happened. And they're like, wow, Hooper, was it cool? And Hooper's like, no, I didn't fucking see it. I was under the boat. And then everyone's like, all right, well, yeah, cool. All right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no, it seems like no one fucking cares what this guy did. And it was the greatest fucking movie ending ever. And it's so annoying to me. Oh,
my whole thing with this movie and the way they've written Brody here is everybody is treating him as certifiable. And guess what? He is. But here's what I would have done with this character. What I would have done, I wouldn't have done that stupid attack from the beginning of this film. I wouldn't even shown the shark for the first, do what Spielberg did. Don't show it for 40, 50 minutes. Have him look paranoid. Have him look like he is going crazy. And then when it does attack, then he is proven right. But as it is, we've seen the shark. We know it's out there. We're seeing these characters react to him, and we're not seeing it being written so that he is actually seeming like he is coming off well. He isn't. He's coming off shitty here. And I think it's a fault of the writing. And I honestly think it's a fault of, you know, the way that the directing is here, too.
I actually had that thought because obviously we talked about how, you know, that really plays into the terror of the first film because you don't see it and, you know, the subtlety of it. I guess to defend this film, once you've shown it in Jaws, it's difficult to go back to that because why would you hide it in two? Because we all now know what sharks will look like in this universe and things like that. Yeah. So I can kind of defend it from that point that it would be difficult to go back to that subtlety, although it's a shame because you do lose something by showing the mechanical shark because it's obviously not, it's very dated and things like that. But I think as well with the paranoia, I actually did have a similar thought with that maybe they could have played on that a little bit more. Obviously they do play it up as a storyline, but in terms of us questioning actually whether he was being paranoid ourselves, but at the same time it helps us get on his side if we know from the hop that there is a shark and we're fully behind him and we can identify with him and not the rest of the arseholes that live in this town that obviously hate him.
Yeah. I agree with both of you in a sense. I like Garrett's idea. I like that. In essence, is a good idea to have it. And that's you know, that movie that you're talking about, Garrett, is focusing on Brody the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's his movie then. This isn't his movie, really, till the end, I guess. The very, very fucking end, by the way. But what Nate's saying, too, and I think I read this somewhere. I don't know if it was in the trivia or whatever, but the directors were just like, yeah, like, we can't redo that. Like, when that shark pops out in the fucking, in the chum, like, that ruined this movie. Like, you can't hide the shark again, you know what I mean? Like, now we just got to think of ways to introduce it that are cooler and better. Now, did they? I don't know. But it's hard to fucking hide a shark in Jaws 2 when it's called Jaws 2 and everyone knows what to expect and then not show it to the third act. I don't think it's possible.
So Brody tells Vaughn that they have another shark problem. He responds that there was a boating accident. I love how just how set on his ways fucking the mayor, who, again, I'm just going to question how this guy got reelected. There's got to be some fucking, there's got to be some conspiracies going on here. This guy's back in office. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's only been 3 years.
Yeah.
So maybe there was an election year in there somewhere.
Maybe.
Maybe he took credit for killing the shark. Maybe he sort of played it off that, you know, it was his idea to send them out there or something like that. He said, my last campaign was based on I'm going to kill all sharks, and I killed this shark.
That's right. Well, it was his signature on the fucking deed for Quint, right? Yeah. Like, he signed the fucking papers, yeah.
You're right. Brody is driving along the beach and comes across the body of the woman who died in the attack. Mm-hmm. I kind of like this scene. It builds some good suspense, seeing him go out in the water to find this body. But it almost seems like a false note because it doesn't really accomplish anything. We don't really, you know, we're not seeing another autopsy after this. We're just seeing this body just kind of pop out of the water almost as like a quote unquote jump scare.
Yeah, I think that's all it is, a jump scare.
I think my favorite point of this scene, though, is the 5 minutes of watching him untie his shoes to go in the water. I was literally watching it and going, I'm literally watching a guy just take his shoes off now. This is entertainment from the 70s, apparently. I thought it was a good horror scene, probably the best one of the film, because you know it is a false scare that you think the shark's going to pop up. Instead, you get this charred remains of a body just leap at him out of the waves. I thought actually I wouldn't say it necessarily made me jump, but if any scene in this film would have, it would have been that one.
We cut to Brody making cyanide-filled bullets. Hooper calls saying he's stuck on a research boating expedition. And all I'm thinking is, God, do I miss fucking Hooper in this movie? he would have been so good.
First of two great callbacks to the first movie, by the way. He's on the expedition that he canceled in the first movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brody grounds Mike, keeping him on the beach, painting cabanas. And we see a montage of beachgoers as Brody sits up in a fucking tower.
That's second reference to the first movie. That's the tower that I looked at in the book. The fucking 70s fucking internet.
And weirdly enough, I remember in the first one thinking that was a weird... Because I didn't get the reference of what it meant in the book. Because when he's flicking through, it was almost like a... This is how we're going to scare you. We're going to show you pictures of sharks, and then we're going to show you a full beach of people, and you're going to make the connection that the shark's going to eat all the people. And I really didn't get the connection in the first film of what I was supposed to be looking at on that page. Right. So when obviously they showed it in this film, I thought, oh, okay, now I'm glad that I now understand what that page was showing me.
It's funny how Ellen's like now like a, she's almost like the higher power of this relationship because now she has a higher job, like working next to the mayor. And that was kind of weird for me. Like they didn't really explain how she got that job, but yeah, it was kind of weird seeing that.
Or what the actual job was.
Or what it was. Yeah.
she just happens to be where important people are.
Yeah.
That's her job.
True.
Job of convenience, the convenience job. But she's not very happy as she looks up and she sees Brody in this tower. And goddamn, does he seem like a fucking crazy man. As he takes cyanide bullets and he shoots up the beach thinking he saw the shark. Turns out to be bluefish. And by the very next scene of the city council meeting, Brody is out of a job. As well he should be, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
What are you guys thinking as you guys are seeing this scene? Like, there's no music or anything accompanying it. Like, I think, are they trying to play off those same beats of the first film? Like, are they trying to make him... I don't get what they're trying to accomplish with this scene. Just showing him go crazy like this.
It's just to completely undermine his character with the entire town. The mayor and all the important people obviously already start looking at him a bit crazy, but I think it's just to really just hammer home that no one believes. And maybe that's the thing. Like, Jim, you keep saying about, you know, it's the best kill of all time at the end of the first one. And maybe what they don't fill in the gap here is maybe people don't believe him how it played out. Maybe they don't believe that this shark was as big or as dangerous as it was. And maybe this is intended to make up by showing everybody just turning on him and thinking that he's a dick, basically.
Yeah, I think I actually think this works. And you're going back to what Nate's saying right now, he's the only one that saw that fucking shark. Well, I guess Hooper did too, but Hooper's not here. But he, you know what I mean? Like he lived through fucking hell. I think he even uses that line in this fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just completely and utterly fucking paranoid. But Nate's also right in saying everyone should be that way because, fuck, there was a little kid eaten right on that beach 3 years ago. Right on that beach. You know what I mean? But I think this, the point, going back to your question, Garrett, the point of this fucking scene, obviously because fucking the mayor's there and Dick Peterson and Ellen's with them too. Ellen being with them is very, very important in the scene. Because not to make him look lesser in front of her, but I think it's more important for her because of how she sticks by him after this happens.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important thing. And we were just talking about the family aspect of this movie, and that's a big fucking key moment in how they get along and how she treats this moment. Like, she feels really bad. She wants to go to him. The mayor says don't, and she does it. She just leaves him alone, you know what I mean? It's an awful scene for Brody. I feel really, like, awful for him. I always hear that fucking... That's one of the most memorable lines in this movie for me is, it's bluefish! It's just bluefish. I'm like an asshole. But you should have shot that guy.
The fact that when he was up the tower, they were treating it as such a big deal, like almost everybody can see him. And I thought, is he really that noticeable? He's 100 feet in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was just weird how big a deal that they were making about him being up there.
Right. How did they even let that tower get built? Like, they're all fucking, you know what I mean? Like, they're so upset about him being in the tower, but, and yet they let him build a 100-foot tower on the beach, a shark tower. It's called a fucking shark lookout tower. So, I don't know. We still need Jaws 1.5. That's my belief.
from Ellen's point of view, or you know how Singer released the X-Men movie from Rogue's point of view? Like, we need to put it from like another character.
Well, look, we get one from Ellen's point of view, and it didn't work out. So let's
not. You're right. There is a nice scene though when the chief is picking up the shells with his son. You know, another good family moment there. Mm-hmm. Anytime it's focusing on his family and his life as a father, I find the movie engaging, but. Those scenes are few and far in between, and you know, we're stuck with everybody seeing how fucking crazy he is.
Sure. Well, you know? Had to fucking bring him down before he gets built back up in one scene at the end.
He gets to see this picture of this shark's eye, right? Of the shark's like nose and eye, and he's showing it in front of this council, saying, "Yeah, we have another shark problem." What are they going to say? Like, are they just going to close everything down? Like, what was he expecting with that?
Like he says in the meeting, you know, I've seen one of these things close up. That's a shark. And he's completely fucking crazy about it. So I don't know. He expects them to say, "Yo, you're right. Let's fucking close it down." But obviously, for the plot, they're not going to ever.
Yeah. I noted earlier, I think my favorite bit of this is that camera was literally going off every second. It was just snapping crazily. Mm-hmm. And the one shot that they got of a shark was a close-up on its eye. That was a little bit annoying. But their reluctance to actually see what was relatively clear and make the dig, oh, is it seaweed? It was opposition for opposition's sake. Yeah. Fucking Len Peterson. He brings a bad name to me. It's this guy. But like I say, like I mentioned earlier in the film, I don't know if it's all due to Ellen, but there seems to be a rivalry between Peterson and Brody, and they don't really pay it off, do they?
No, but there are cut scenes that explain it a little bit.
Oh, okay.
They cut a few scenes out that explain it.
And I wasn't sure if, like I say, that was just a case of Len wanting to bang Ellen, and that it just came down to that.
That was a big part of it, and that's what the scenes actually involve. And you know, if you're going to cut that out, like just cut the whole part of it out, not just, you know, there are scenes in on the cutting room floor of him like trying to take her out to dinner and these kinds of things, and Brody approaching her about it. And you know, I'm glad all that stuff hit the cutting room floor, but stop alluding to it if you're going to cut it.
Did a book version come out before this movie? Like did Jaws 2? No. Okay.
The studio went to Carl Gottlieb, the guy who pretty much fixed the first film in the writing stage, and Howard Sackler, who was a playwright. And those two guys who worked on the first script, they got them together and said, all right, make us a new one and put it in the vein of the first. And this is what they came up with. You know, in that interview I did with Gottlieb, he flat out said, he's like, yeah, I was fascinated by the culture of sailing and I wanted to incorporate that into this film. That's pretty much the outline of how this movie started.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no book beforehand. There's no nothing. Although, and I'm going to go ahead and endorse this, they did release, just last year, they released a making of book on this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it in preparation for this podcast. It's fucking fascinating, some of the stuff in that book. Like, this movie is pretty much credited with creating the sequel, you know, the concept of a sequel. Because, you know, we got The Godfather 2 the next year, and, you know, it was right after this movie came out that all these sequels started arriving. The way they depicted how they approached, like, okay, we're going to do another one. Mm-hmm. And people thought they were crazy at first, and then, like, they kind of started warming up to it. It's fascinating how this movie is credited with creating the sequel concept.
Wow.
Isn't Jaws credited with the summer blockbuster as well?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes.
So this franchise obviously is, you know, important from a cinematic point of view, if not just an entertainment point of view.
Yeah, I recommend that book if anybody ever gets a chance to see it. Read it. It's really, really interesting.
Okay.
Really interesting. I don't know if there's a book on tape version of it locked for you.
Book on tape.
Book on tape.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Book on tape.
my fucking
audiobook. Sorry, audiobook.
Yeah. Could you read it and like send me the MP3? Could you read it to me? Without your fucking giggles and shit, just read this.
Maybe we'll offer it as a Patreon perk.
There you go.
So Brody comes home drunk and fired, yet he's still in his chief uniform, and he still has his car from the previous day. And there are like 7 beer cans right outside the fucking door of his.
Well, car. He didn't drink and drive. He's a responsible drunk.
Yeah,
he parked and drank. Drink and park. What is it? Drink and park.
Okay. Drink and park. Maybe that long glass of red that he had from the first film has just finally hit him 3 years later.
That huge fucking 2 liter.
Yeah. It just took a while to kick in.
Actually, we see this is the third reference to the first movie. One of the barrels holding the flowers in front of his house.
Yes. I was going to mention that. Watching this, I was the first time I actually caught that. I had never seen it until this viewing of this film. Mm-hmm. That was a cool little reference. I enjoy seeing that a lot. But I just don't endure myself to Brody in these scenes. Like, Ellen doesn't really do it for me. It needs to be the three angles all the characters were coming from in the last film. Like, that's what made it for me. And with the sequel, like, all inference is gone. And we're just seeing it from Brody's point of view. Without those other two characters to play off of, with just his family and these bunch of asshole congressmen, councilmen, it just doesn't work for me.
He has no one on his side in this movie. He had, like, yes. Hooper was on his, I don't even know if Hooper's on his side. Hooper convinced him, like, you know what I mean? Like, he was on Hooper's side. And then Quint obviously believed in them, they're talking about, too. So, this movie, he doesn't have anybody. He's just on his own, and he's just sad.
So Mike sneaks out and brings Sean with him as Sean catches him on his way out. And we have the two kids going out in the water. Do we really think they're in danger? In fact, the stakes could have really been raised if one of these two died. But this obviously wasn't the film they were making. Like, I would have killed one of these two characters if I was writing this thing. You know, that would have been a consequence of going out in this water that nobody seems to want to play
off. What scene is this? I can't remember what we're talking about.
When they're leaving for breakfast. And Sean catches Mike going on his way out the door, and he convinces Mike to go with to let him go with him on these boats.
And you would have killed one of them at breakfast. You're a
no, no. What I'm saying is, like, if by convincing him to go, I would have killed Sean or Mike on out in the water. You know, they're not going to kill Sean because he's obviously younger, and Spielberg is the only one in this franchise who has the balls to kill a kid. I would have killed one of these two characters to raise the stakes a little bit. There's even a point in time when Mike's out and he's knocked out. I would have killed him. Like, I would have had the shark get him, but they don't do that.
Well, Garrett, Jaws 4 does that for
him. Yeah, we'll get there.
Sorry, there goes, trust me, we're not suspense of Jaws 4.
Oh, trust me. There's a ton of more things to look at in Jaws 4.
I will say,
you know what I'm saying though? Like, why would you not kill one of these characters? Why would you not do that?
I think having Sean there is almost, I don't want to say it's unnecessary, because I don't think they play on the fact that he's there as a young kid enough. Obviously, there's a couple of scenes where, you know, he is on his other boat, but I don't think the fact of him being there as a young kid who can essentially do very, very little, even compared to the older teenagers. I don't really know what the motivation was necessarily to have Sean there, because I don't think it added to any more terror that Brody would have felt had it just been Mike.
Yeah. Well, it's to get him there, right? Like, Michael's too young to hang out with these kids, and just to get, he's not going to go sailing by himself anywhere and be in jeopardy from a shark, unless he's just sitting in the boat by the dock like a fucking idiot in the first movie.
No, of course, but what I'm saying is Brody's obviously already, he obviously doesn't know Sean's with him when he first goes out to try and save Mike. So what's the intent? What's the necessity of having Sean there? Sean's never really in any. He's in a bit of peril, I guess. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. I don't think I would necessarily have gone to the extreme of killing one of them. But at the same time, I do feel like by having both of them out there, they don't capitalize on having both of them out there.
I look at this as them, like, they were written into a corner because of the age of these kids and how they were in the first movie. I think if you kill one of the kids, you do it early, but that changes the entire thing of the movie. Like, then Brody's like hell bent, and like, it's kind of like a fuck, I'm gonna go kill the shark again. Like, I'm, you know, it's a revenge type thing. Killing him in the final scene, like the third act, if you kill one of them, well, let's say Sean, you're not gonna kill Michael. I don't think they're gonna kill the youngest kid in the movie. But if you kill Sean, I don't know. Like, I think it's too, he's too distraught to do anything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, they conveniently get rid of him, right? Which is,
yeah,
kind of, it's really weird. And he delivers the worst line in the movie, by the way, when they do. We're jumping way ahead here, but it's just like, how does that ending play out? He shows up and all the shit's going on and he finds out that his oldest son's dead. Like, does the movie still play the way it does? I don't think it does. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird. It would be a weird aspect to it. Look, like I said, they have to deal with the ages of these kids. And because Sean's the older one, that's the whole basis of the movie. All these kids, the slasher aspect of it, all these teenage kids going out. And then having Michael in peril gives Brody the incentive to do what he does at the end of the film.
I love how, going by like all these fucking teenagers on these boats, I love how like that they're building up the presence of this Jackie girl, right? She comes up and she looks a little weird. Like, she doesn't look as attractive as they made her out to be.
Oh, when she first showed up, they were like, she was the fucking, we're in the 70s, so she was the bee's knees when she showed up. Right? Like, oh, look at this fucking chick. Look at her blouse and her slacks. She's fucking amazing.
She's got tits like a sparrow. As one sparrow. Of them.
My kids, that was the one line my kids were like, huh? And I was like,
never mind. That's,
no. I think they were just wondering if sparrows had tits.
She, I mean, I think we've gone past it, but there's a scene with her and Michael at the bar. It's just one of the worst pieces of dialogue between them, not just in this film, just in general. It's just when they're talking about going out sailing and he's like, I can't go out, my parents won't let me, and she turns to him, she goes, do you always do what your parents tell you? And then he pauses and looks at her, no. It's just a really horrible piece of dialogue.
But wait,
it's just cheesy and badly delivered.
The one aspect of that conversation that you didn't bring up is 3 seconds before that conversation, they're like, hey, Sean, you gonna go? He's like, yeah. And then he goes to the bar and she goes, so you gonna go? He's like, no. What are you talking about, you dickhead?
Yeah.
That's weird because they introduced that part of Mike having a romantic link with this girl, but they never play that up. Like, they never follow through on that. We never, ever see these two on screen together again. They're going by this team of crab-gathering ocean dwellers, and I love how, like, the film just kind of gets handed off to these fucking people that are another set of people we've never met before. Mm-hmm. And the kids actually know these people, and the it's very weird how, like, the next 6 or 7 minutes, we're here in this bit of storytelling of going these people going down and being attacked by the shark. I don't know. Well, I found this as part of the film really, really odd.
This scene does two things. First of all, it has the in-between to tell everybody where the kids are, because they tell them where they're going, right? So it has that person to say, oh, they're out by the fucking lighthouse. And also it sets up when the shark's done with this asshole, when he fucking this is a great jump scare, by the way, when he fucking swims over this guy. I fucking love this scene, and this is the first time we get to see his fucking scar face. But it sets up that scene where the shark is like, oh, right, fuck these guys, and he takes off, and his fucking, you get that just above the water scene and you see the sailboats in the distance.
Love
that scene. That's fucking great, man.
It is a good jump scare scene with the shark, because I actually made a note just before, I was making a note as that happened, about how there's scenes in this film which play out too long. Like, I've already made a joke about Brody taking his shoes off, and to some degree this kind of felt the same, because there was no music, there was no tension being built up, and you just saw him just going around, and you do obviously get the impression, oh, he's going to come across something, because obviously he's in the water and this is Jaws 2, of course something's going to happen. They do play this kind of well, because in the first film and this one, as I say, there's usually something to really build up, and this shark just literally just comes out of nowhere. But I will say, I got a bit confused, because obviously the shark comes close enough to him that it looks like maybe he's bitten him. He gets out of the water and there's like no bite marks, but he's bleeding from his face, and I'm like, what the how the fuck, what's going on here? But I was a little bit confused as to, they obviously explain it later on, but the moment they pull him out and you see him, I was a little unclear of what's actually happened to him. So I don't know if they played that very well, but the reveal of Two-Faced Shark was pretty decent.
Yeah.
Two-Faced Shark.
Also, when they show that he bit through his fucking his breathing apparatus too.
Yeah.
I actually remember as a kid, and probably way too long to admit, that I thought the shark bit it. I didn't know what that meant at all.
What I like as well is how small that is. Like, the shark would have had to just have a little nibble of it.
Just nibbled it,
Brody wakes up hungover, goes outside, finds a 6 or 7 beer cans, just kicking around in his by the outside of his car. And we see what I think is by far the best attack of the film. I do love seeing this guy, Eddie, get chomped on, but I feel bad for the position this girl is put in. Mm-hmm. But man, I love seeing this guy struggle to make it to the boat, getting propelled by the shark into the boat, and the shock in Tina's face as the shark chomps down on him in a pool of blood. Like, all of this, I think this is a very, very good scene. This is a huge, this is probably the highlight of the film for me.
Yeah, I love this fucking scene. Yeah. This is awesome. The way he hammers him into that boat, and the sound of the scene is too, is pretty fantastic. And Tina really sells it, because Tina is just fucking petrified when she's telling him to fucking swim. I'm not saying this is as good as the opening scene in the first movie, but it's on par with it. It's in the same vein, you know what I mean? As far as terrifying goes for me.
I wouldn't say disappointed, that's probably the wrong word, but I did like the idea of him hitting the side of the boat and that being enough to kill him. Like, when that happened, I was like, oh, that's grim, that he's just literally been rammed and it's probably broken his neck and things like that. But obviously it climbs on the side of the boat, so it obviously didn't play out like that.
Right.
It is, as a death scene, pretty terrifying.
Yeah, and I get the feeling, like, we've seen these two periodically throughout the course of this film. We've seen this guy kind of serenader with his guitar right during the right before the boating scene. And, you know, I'm wondering, did this guy actually get laid by this chick before?
Well,
he's trying so hard to get this girl. I'm wondering if maybe they've gone at it a couple times.
Garrett, it's all in the details, Garrett. She's got bruises on her butt. What's that from?
True. Yeah.
The fuck are those bruises from, Garrett? She has been pounded hard by this guy. And again, how fucking conveniently does this fit into our slasher fucking thing? They're about to have sex. Fucking Jod shows up, says nope, and fucking kills him.
Yeah.
She asks for him to put down a blanket to protect her this time. He looks in the cooler for one. There's just beers everywhere, and I think, you're looking in them. You know there's not one there, Eddie. Come on.
Eddie. Dick. He checks his jacket pockets. Oh, hold on.
I left it in my other jacket.
I love how Brody, like, has access to this boat and access to everything, even like the day after he gets fired.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that's changed. Like, he is literally still in the same position he was before. He just officially doesn't have the job anymore.
Come on, they deal with that. He doesn't want to let him take it, and he doesn't know how to fucking drive it. This is good, Brody. I like this Brody, because he's just like, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know how to do it. They fucking take off. Isn't it still tied down to the fucking anchor when they take off?
Yeah.
Like, he's a fucking idiot on the water, and it's true Brody. I like that.
Yeah. He sees the diver that was attacked earlier brought in, and Brody finds out that Mike is now out in the water headed to the lighthouse. So to compensate, Brody calls a chopper, and we are then treated to some decent attacks. But my problem with these attacks is they just have no balls. Like, nobody is getting killed here.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a terrifying scene before this. I understand that, but like, all these kids are in peril. Mm-hmm. They're stranded out with these boats. I just don't feel any danger here.
Yeah.
Well, I feel danger, but I cannot argue with you that more of them should have died. Absolutely.
I'll also say there's a shot here which is possibly worse than what we would had to deal with in Jaws 1, where the shark sort of scrapes along the side of a boat. It sort of comes. And you can basically see straight down its throat. You can see the mechanics, the way that as it hits the boat, the side of the sort of caves in. It's actually a really bad shot of the shark. Worse than what we got at the end of the first film.
That was a scene. It's detailed in that book that it was such a bitch. The film, they could not get that shot correct, and they were struggling until that sun was just about ready to come down, and they could not get it. They got what they got. But I agree, it could have been much better. And you're right, there are just way too many mechanics being shown in that, and the strings are being shown. Mm-hmm. And not to mention, it's telling that Spielberg was able to do more with 3 deaths than what this director is able to do with these kids. Like, I'm just not feeling any fright here. I'm not feeling it.
I don't know, I kind of do. There's a couple of, like you say, when Mike gets knocked out and things like that.
Yeah.
I think there is a little bit of peril, but like you say, where's the consequence? So I do think that I think it's a bit of middle ground. I think it is pretty scary at times, but yeah, there's just not enough consequence from it.
I love the shipwreckness. The shipwreckness of it. Is that a word? Shipwreckness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shipwreckness. Wreckedness. Love that they're all kind of piled on one another. I don't know. They're shipwrecked basically, and they're just on a big fucking floating pile of garbage, and the shark's fucking swimming around them. The one part that bothers the fuck out of me, and I don't know how far we're going in this, but when Sean falls in, what? If you look at the position he's in when he falls in, it's one of the stupidest fucking things I could ever think of. Like, everyone else is on the middle of something. He's leaning on a different boat from another boat. And when the shark attacks, that boat just drifts away about a foot, and Sean fucking falls in. It annoys the fuck out of me. And he got that fucking, the one death we're talking about, it's his fault. Because she goes after him, that fucking cocksucker.
Yeah, I love how when he does fall in, like, the guy's like, hey, you don't get on there, I'm going to beat your ass, you understand? Like, he's threatening him to get up back up on that fucking boat. It's like, come on, really? Like, this is how you're egging him on to fucking get back on there? I'd rather be chewed by a shark than listen to your fucking mouth the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah, when he throws the rope, this is when he's abusing him. He's like, turn your ass around and look at this fucking rope. And he does. Scared as fuck.
Yeah. And even at one point, like, Brody's, like, looking at the camera, and he just says, yeah, I'm all alone out here. Yeah, you sure are. You certainly are. You know, a lot of the returning people here, we have the same director of photography, same writers, same producers, a lot of the same teams returning, but a lot of the suspense is gone at this point. Mm-hmm. Brody's just like, yeah, I'm all alone. Yes, you are. We then see the birth of Sharktopus as the takedown of the chopper by the shark in another ridiculous attack. I hate this helicopter attack. Oh, hate it.
Fuck you. This is fucking awesome. Why do you hate it?
It's stupid. It's just dumb. This shark is super shark. He's gonna chomp down on this chopper. Take the chopper down. Really? Like, this is so dumb.
No,
this really is dumb.
I disagree. I love this fucking scene.
I have to say I think I agree with Garrett. I don't know. It's too much. Even the setup to it. He stood on the side of the chopper with his feet probably about a foot away from the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Not one kid fucking warns him about this fucking shark that's been terrifying him for the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird that not one of them would say, "Watch out, mister. There might be a shark biting your ankle any second now." And then the shark comes and drags an entire helicopter underwater.
It's fucking awesome.
The one detail I do like the attention to detail in that the blades were still going and that danger of those fucking blades hitting anybody. And it's chopping up the boats. I thought that was kind of cool. Mm. But man, just the lead up to it. Oof. So a girl helping Sean escape gets killed. And I love how this director just has no idea to film the shark without it looking fake. Like, the scene of it chomping down on this girl is just pathetically shot.
I hate all of you guys right now. I just fucking...
Why? Like, you're seeing it from behind. You're seeing it from behind. You're seeing it, like, chomp down on her, like, from behind. And I'm like, come on. He says in the materials and in that book, he says, yeah, my goal was to... We've seen the shark. I'm going to keep showing it over and over. You don't show it that much. Spielberg had it right. You fucking keep it in suspense. And him showing this girl get chomped down like this is just stupid.
You want everyone to fucking die, and then someone dies, and you bitch about that. Like,
I don't mind it. I like the fact that she died. I hate the fact I hated how it was filmed.
God damn it!
I didn't care one way or the other.
What do you mean? What do you mean you didn't care?
I agree with Jim, just to give him a little bit of a morale boost in this film.
So Brody finds Mike, and I love how surprised Brody gets when Mike tells him that Sean's out there. Like, where did he think Sean was? He hadn't seen him leading up to this.
Yeah, how old is Sean, do we think? Is he must be, what, 10, something like that?
10 or 12, yeah.
Yeah, and they sort of come down, they go, oh, he's not in his room, he must be out playing somewhere.
That's right. That's it. What? Done.
I love law.
What do you need? I don't understand. What you need a whole subplot as to where he thinks fucking...
Not a whole subplot. One line.
They had the one line. He's probably out playing somewhere. Done. That's your one fucking line. What are you talking about?
I guess it's a snapshot of a different time. I think nowadays, if I woke up one day and my 10-year-old daughter wasn't in the house, I think I'd be a little bit more concerned than, oh well, she must be out playing somewhere. But maybe in the '70s, in a small island town, maybe it's
fucking talk to me in 9 years. I wake up, my 10-year-old's not in the house. I'm like, oh fuck, cool. I mean, Jesus Christ, you're not. They live on an island, a beach, you know what I mean? Like, the kid could be doing fucking anything. He doesn't give a fuck. Why are we talking about this for so long? Give me a fucking break. He didn't know he was out there. What the fuck? Oh, but by the way, this was the scene, the worst line in the movie. Sean's out there, and he's like, what? He's like, it's okay, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It absolutely was not okay in any aspect. Even if there wasn't a shark, it's not okay that he's out there. This is the worst line of the film. It's Oh my god, I fucking cringe every time I hear it.
Yeah,
it was okay, wasn't it?
Yeah, even just the timing of it, even just like, oh, by the way, your son's in peril, but we're cool, right? We're cool.
Now, as much as I've been ragging on this film, and I understand I have been ragging on it, I do like the last act of it. I like how the boat gets stuck on the bottom. This island that they had over here, I didn't realize I'd read this book. This island was actually built completely from scratch. Like, this wasn't here. Like,
it's a fake island, yeah.
I could believe that.
You know, I didn't realize that before I read the book. There are some great shots of, like, the shark coming up through the fabric of the boat. I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
But even in this scene, like, there's a perfect opportunity for another death as there's a fatty swimming. And instead of killing her, the shark just kind of swims by her and cuts her.
What does her weight have to do with anything? What are you doing?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But, like, why would you not have her, like, chomp from below or something? Like, why is this a swimming by and just cuts her?
I'm in total agree with you. There should have been more deaths. I'm not going to argue that at all.
Yeah, and I understand this was a PG-rated film, and they probably couldn't push it as much as they would have liked. Mm-hmm. They probably fought to get this PG rating. There is a little bit of intensity in this film, but at least something. Like,
mind you, there are more deaths in this movie than Jaws, right?
But there's more people in the water in this film.
Yeah. True. Yeah, that's just a matter of numbers there. It's like, yeah, there's more people, meaning that there's going to be more. But there's not enough, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. To create a little bit of fright.
Okay.
At the very end, the Williams score finally kicks into something great. I love the very final bit of Williams score. Like the entire film, I haven't really liked Williams score. You know, with the exception of his Jaws theme. You know, I don't think Williams would want him to be here either. But the final bit here, the score kicks in and we see Brody kill the shark with the power line. Mm-hmm. It's a convenient way of killing it, not to mention this is going to knock out the power of the entire island, but it is pretty cool. I enjoyed the final death of this really a lot.
It also the callback to the conversation that he had with the marine biologist earlier in the oceanologist, whatever her title was, because we never get told. When they're talking about sharks and he's talking about how they communicate or something like that, and she says something, oh, they sound as well, and he's like, sound, and then she quite clearly spells out how he's going to end up distracting the shark later on.
You know what? I never caught that. Wow. Yeah,
she says about sound, and as soon as she said it, because of the one that was dealt with, I was like, well, this is brand new information that is clearly going to play in somewhere down the line. It felt like, so the shark can hear it.
A couple of things about the end, and I never thought about this first one until Nate was talking earlier in the show. You remember when he was tying his shoes? How long that took? And him getting into the raft is fucking one of the most awkwardly long moments in a dire situation I've ever fucking witnessed in a movie. He fucking takes forever to get in this raft, and it's ridiculous.
And even like grabbing that paddle and hitting the line, mm-hmm. like even that, it took at least about what 20 or 30 hits on that fucking line for it to actually get its attention.
I think there's some editing problems in that scene too, because as soon as he gets in the raft, he starts hitting it with the paddle. And then there's a scene, he stops for some reason. And then there's a scene where he looks down and they have a close-up of the paddle like he just noticed it and he starts doing it again. It's really fucking weird. I don't understand why it's shot like that.
It is weirdly cut, yeah.
The first time Brody sees the shark in the movie, it might be one of my favorite parts of the movie. Like, he scares the ever-living fuck out of him again, and I fucking love how he just drives his boat into a fucking giant pile of boulders in the middle of the fucking ocean. I love that scene. So, but here's the gist of the fucking ending, okay?
Okay.
A huge sigh of relief when he does it again. He's this fucking, this is almost better than the first one. And he's got like 17 fucking people watching him do it this time. And you're like, yes!
Yes! Poetic justice in Law's eyes. He's finally getting the shark death he wanted, where people are seeing him kill it.
He's justified. Finally a legend.
But he doesn't have any cool lines this time around. He doesn't have any. What was he said in the first one? Smile, you bitch.
Smile, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. He doesn't have any of that. He's just like.
Well, he kind of does because he's like, all right, you big bastard, come on. Like, I do like the way he's like egging him on. I don't know. I know it's really cheesy and probably like the majority of this movie is kind of bad. Probably, but at this instance, maybe it's because of William's score. I don't know. I'm buying it and I'm enjoying it. But you're right, Law. Like him getting into that raft, I didn't even think that's what you said it, but it takes so long for him to get in that fucking thing.
He's like hanging there and he's pulling it over with his foot. And there's a fucking shark. You guys are talking about the fucking helicopter guy. There's still a shark in the water while he's doing this. It's a rubber raft, fuck's sake.
All right, and then last scene, Mike puts Sean in the boat, and they share a little laugh. And Mike and Brody paddle off to home, and Shatter never comes back to the series again. Nope. So on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give this? I'm going to go to Nate first.
There's no shenanigans with my scoring on this one. I'm not going to give you 2 like I did the last one. I was saying to Law before we started recording that I just find this film just very middle of the road. I found it hard to really enjoy it. I found it really hard to dislike anything, not barring a couple of scenes. It just sort of just passed by, and it was like, okay, that's fine. I think I'm probably going to end up giving it a 6, a fairly soft 6. It was a pass. I didn't love enough of it to give it more than that, I don't think. I'd be interested to know whether, in terms of quality in general, how big of a drop-off this is. Like, are there any other sequels that drop off from such a big and amazing first film? Because I know Law loves this, but generally speaking, it's nowhere near as good as the first one.
I think this is one of the better sequels. Like, are you kidding me? There's a million fucking sequels that are worse, like way, way, way worse than the first movie.
That go from a 10 to this? Are there that many?
A 10 to a 6, you think? I don't think that's horrible at all. No.
But I think if you're capable of making a 10, mm-hmm. like generally speaking, if you make a 10 yeah, first off,
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, but it's not. It's Spielberg directed this.
I was gonna say they're missing a Spielberg. Right. That's
of
why.
Course. But like I say, if you're capable of making a 10 first off, how many sequels drop this significantly off? You know, first time round, like not the third film or fourth. I appreciate that by that time you are sort of slowing down, but are there that? There might not be that many sequels to a 10 anyway. I just wondered if this was. It's just a lacking quality that the first one had that I've never seen that significant a drop off from such an amazing first film.
All right, now I'm gonna have to do research and give you a whole fucking full list.
Please do.
Yeah, I was gonna say I can't wait for the next podcast because Law's gonna probably come with an entire.
My whole week at the cottage is me gonna be doing fucking research to fucking shut Nate the fuck up about this bullshit fucking 10 to 6 bullshit. I don't know.
By the way, Nate. Fuck you for that last fucking podcast because I'm having trouble putting that fucking article together because I don't know how to put that you put 2 fucking scores on it.
Well, you've got 2 options. You go for the higher one, or you could do an average. Uh-huh. You could just take the 10 and the 8 and average it out to a 9.
Yeah.
Right.
Whatever.
No,
I don't care. Right. Do what you want. Pick a number.
Jim Law.
Oh, jeez. I'll go a very strong 7.5. Fuck you, wow. Jack Rowley.
You find the film that enjoyable?
Oh, absolutely. I have a great time with Just 2 every time. Every time I watch it.
How often do you revisit this one?
Like I said, this was the first Jaws movie I ever watched. And I just had a thing for it ever since I was a kid. I probably watched it at least a dozen times.
This was kind of a letdown for me. I gotta say, I had better memories of this. I remember enjoying it a lot as a kid and even like as a young adult. I really enjoyed it. Rewatching it, I realized just the drop in quality. Now, that's not saying it's not watchable. It's a very watchable film. There are parts of it that are pretty enjoyable, but for the most part, it's it's a real downward slide from the last film. And that says a lot considering what we're going to get in the next couple weeks. Having said that, though, it's a watchable film. I know I dogged on it a lot, but I do find a lot of things about this pretty enjoyable. But it's still a 5.5. It's fuck you, Jack Valley, again. It's still a 5.5. It's a 5.5. It's over being below average, but it's a middle-of-the-road film. And that's a kind of a letdown, considering how much of a good rep this movie has, and how much I enjoyed it as a young person.
I can't fucking imagine your scores for the next two movies. But like, if you think of this series as a whole, Jesus Christ, this is Godfather 2 for fuck's sakes. Now listen,
yeah,
I'm not gonna let you go before I give fucking Nate a fucking answer to his question, because I've been fucking staring at my wall of movies for the last fucking 5 minutes. Just angry as fuck that he would have that. Now I've had the ultimate answer. Now, of course, this is all a preference, because the key to your question is a 10, right?
Yep.
It's what you consider a 10.
Yep.
Here's mine. This is by far the best answer I could possibly come up with for that question.
Go for it.
The Exorcist 2.
That was going to be mine.
Okay. I'm not really well versed on the Exorcist franchise. Was Exorcist 2... Uh-oh. A wide Uh-oh. Release. No.
You just set up our next aftertaste.
Yep. Come in. Yep.
I was going to ask you that question, whether we've got one lined up for another one. Anyway, was Exorcist 2 widely released in the cinema? It wasn't directed video or anything like that, no?
Oh, it was definitely cinema, because Linda Blair was in it.
It was widely released. It was widely touted. It was widely hyped. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine. Like I said, I didn't do any research. Whenever I think of, real classic movies, the ones that have sequels, at the very least, are good films. I'm not even really shitting on this one that much. I kind of think if you're capable off the bat of starting a new franchise, you can hit a 10. You kind of feel like you'd be able to attract, like you said, there's no Spielberg, there's no Dreyfuss, and I can understand why they weren't on this project, but you'd think that if they had been on it, this would have at the very least been an 8 or a 9, because you just think there's enough quality there to do it. It's weird that you can do that, and I appreciate that they obviously had different filming schedules, and there's reasons why they didn't come back to it. I get that, but you sort of think if you are able to do such an amazing film first off, even if those elements are then removed, you'd still be able to bring in good enough filmmakers, good enough actors, good enough screenwriters to produce a good film second time round. And I know you like this lore, but generally speaking, I think even you'd admit this isn't anywhere near the quality that the first one is.
No,
so that's why watching it, I was just like, this is just a steep curve and fall off from the first one.
Let me ask you this. Now, this is way more relatable, the movie that I'm going to bring up. And I don't know how you feel about them. I don't even know if I think the first one's a 10. It's very close, but I'm just not sure yet. But it's very, very close. Do you think the drop-off between Jaws and Jaws 2 is bigger than the drop-off between Jurassic Park and Jurassic Park 2? Very similar, right? Spielberg first movie?
Possibly. I mean, I for me, I probably... I will say this. Jurassic Park 2, it, for me, is Jaws 2 for you. It's not anywhere near as good as the first one. But
Nate, you're setting up the next 6 months of your life in this fucking podcast.
If you want to do a Jurassic Park aftertaste, I am there. I will.
I love Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I have a few ideas, and that's definitely one of them. You're setting a lot of things up. But yeah, I to go back to Jaws 2 real quick. They were just starting to get the feel of how to do a sequel, as I was saying earlier. So they were wanting to grab all the main players back. They couldn't get Spielberg. They got what they got. And this movie, by the way, still made north of $200 million. Mm-hmm. So their gamble was correct. They spent $30 million on this, which is a huge budget back in 1978. And they paid off dividends with it. It still worked with those audiences. They wanted to see the shark back. They got it. It made a lot of money. So you can't fault what they did and what they brought to the table. It's just years later looking at it. I can't have the same love for it that I had when I was 10, 12 years old.
Sorry, just while you were talking, I was listening, I promise. But just while you were listening, I decided to Google the Rotten Tomato scores for all of the Jaws films.
Mm-hmm. Get ready.
So Jaws one, I think, no surprise, 97%. Very, very high. Mm-hmm. Actually surprised slightly that it's not 100, but very high. Jaws 2, 55%. which, you know, I can see. Jaws 3, 11%. And obviously, by far, my favorite is Jaws the Revenge, 0%.
I will possibly rebut that, but we're going to get there.
Oh my God, I hope you do. This will be the best.
Yeah. All right, guys, that does it for Jaws 2. A little bit of a fighty podcast, as we promised last week. Law can't get over what's going to bring in a couple weeks.
Oh, that's going to be amazing. I cannot wait for fucking Nate. I want to be there when Nate watches these movies.
I do, too. We need a live feed.
You're going to love Jaws 2 so much more after you watch these next two fucking movies.
I was just thinking that, too.
Maybe it's the context.
It is.
Thanks, guys, and we will be back next week with Jaws 3. So until next week, thanks, guys. Used to swimming with bold-legged women, huh?
Yeah.
See you later, guys.
Farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston, and so nevermore shall we see you again.
Why am I trying to call and then, like, you guys call me? That's weird.
Well, because when you call us, it hangs up and says the call has to go on hold. So I hang, because I called Nate, I have to call you to make it work.
So you screwed everything up.
No, I actually fixed your screw up, so shut your mouth.
I don't know. It's just a weird, weird shift.
Go ahead, Nate.
I was going to say, you call it slasher, I call it splasher.
God damn. I should not have let you in. I shouldn't.
You really should not have let him in with that. Oh, jeez. God. We see the gang of friends that Michael is around, and it occurred to me, again, that this is just the setup of more of the slasher films, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and we just did this for the beginning of it, so skip this part.
Yeah.
Here's a scene that's probably played out in the binge offices weekly. Brody wakes up hungover, right? He goes outside. I thought that joke would play off a little better.
I enjoyed it, Gary. Don't worry.
This is going to be so much fun. And Nate, yeah, you've cemented it. I was going to do Poltergeist next, but The Exorcist is sounding interesting. And wow. Hold on, Jurassic Park is going to be interesting.
Fucking Poltergeist. That's another fucking sequel drop off. God damn it.
Yeah. All right. Fine. You've proved your point. I was asking the question. I didn't say it was the only one. Come on.
You're putting so many bloopers in this fucking episode. It's insane.
I was staring the whole time you guys were talking. I was staring at my DVD wall. I was like, and I'm coming up with movies like Scream. I'm like, no, fuck, I love Scream too. God damn it. I'm picking all the movies of fucking wrong ones.
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on BingeMedia.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Buy some merch at BingeMedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at BingeMedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget,
I can't get enough of soup.
Bob Odenkirk.